Hello, welcome to the Interview in Indies podcast, episode one, where I interview indie game developers and pick their brain. I'm someone who's never made a game, so let's just get that out of the way. But today I'm joined by Ruby Dev, the creator of Tiny Rogues.
Yes, hello. Ruby, I made a game.
You made a game. You've made more than Tiny Rogues, that's for sure. I've done some research, but Tiny Rogues is only your published game on Steam, right?
Yeah, basically, I went to like, I have like a computer science degree, and like the school was a game development minor or major or whatever you call it. So we had to do a lot of projects. So I have experience in making other games, and our finals project is even on Steam. It's like called Happy Funtime Labs. It's kind of like Happy Wheels and Mario Maker combined. It was very ambitious for like a few students to make. It turned out janky, but it's for what it became, it's quite cool, and it taught me a lot, for example, how to put a game on Steam. And yeah, there's like a few game jam submissions on like my itch page, and I recently linked all that in like an AMA post. But yeah, so I have experience with like finishing projects, but as you say, Tiny Rogues was my first attempt of a commercial project, and the goal was to like sell it one time on Steam. And
I mean, you definitely sold it more than one time. And it's funny that you mentioned your itch.io, because before this, I actually went and played all of your itch.io games. And I I played all of them that I could, but I wanted to talk about them and kind of ask what level of, how far into your game dev journey were you, and like what you learned from every game, if you even learned anything from every single game, if you're fine with that.
Yeah, let's do it. I don't know how much I can remember or how much I learned, but...
Well, I guess the first question before we get into that is how long you've been developing games for?
So I've been developing games on a, like, technically for a long time, because even in like kindergarten, I was like sitting there and drawing like Pokemon maps and Yu-Gi-Oh cards. And I would like go to like Google Translator, and I knew that Konami is like Chinese or whatever. I mean, I was completely oblivious. How old are you? Like 10? Maybe even younger. And so like I just translated stuff I recently learned to write, and I translated it and was like, oh, this is my submission as a Yu-Gi-Oh card. You should totally make that stuff. And then like I feel like after that, it was more like at some point we had like this club going on in like elementary school it was still, and I wanted to make a website for it. And there was this like, sorry that I'm like talking, telling an entire story.
Tell the stories. We're here for this.
There was like these, I guess nowadays it's like Squarespace and stuff, but back then it was like called Jimdo. I don't know if anybody knows that, but you don't
never
need to
heard
know
of Jimdo before.
Programming to make a website there. It's more like, you know, like, I'm missing the English word right now. It's like point and click stuff, right? Like you click, add a text here. Stuff like that. So even like a very young child like me, who spent like time in the internet and on forums and stuff, like could work with it. And then I got this idea, oh my god, I want to add a game to this website. And I still could not program at that point. And then I like got into ROM hacking of Pokemon games a little bit, but that was still kind of too complicated, because you kind of still had to know about programming.
Was this still in elementary school?
Like,
this is all still elementary
like,
school.
Well, like, how old are you? Yeah, I remember it was like third grade. In Austria, we have four grades of elementary school. So like, that was like third to fourth grade where I dove into that. I didn't understand anything about ROM hacking, but there were like pretty sophisticated like map editors already. And that was kind of like something that a child in that age could understand. So I would like draw maps and stuff, and then like hit the save button and it would appear in game. So That was really cool. And then I kind of like got into RPG Maker, which is a program or like multiple programs that you don't actually need to have any programming language for. And there's like so many tutorials and stuff. And it was like a huge thing back then. And there is a lot of people using them. And like I said, making tutorials and stuff. So I got more and more into that. And then like, as I got grew older, I still made RPG Maker games and stuff. And then eventually I decided on this. I mean, this is a more complicated story, but I'll simplify it a little bit. I got to like studying, and then I found out that in the nearest city, there is actually like this kind of like computer science bachelor, and they have like a focus on game development. So then I finally learned programming, and that studies, although my studies there started in 2018. So,
oh, wow, only like, 6 years.
Yeah, 2019, 2020 around is where I then like had enough programming knowledge to start my own projects and work in group projects and so on. So that's when I'd consider I actually started game development, but like way before that, I already did stuff with RPG Maker and stuff, which was fun. And it also like primed me in a good way for like my game development career for sure.
Yeah, so you got an early start. So you started on itch.io back in just only like 5-6 years ago?
I mean, I wouldn't say I started on itch. Itch is more like, you know, like you grab resources and assets there. So you have an account anyways. And then like sometimes it's very handy to use their feature of uploading games and then you can play them in the browser. So it's just something I guess every dev at some point like made an itch account and then you upload games there, yeah. But it's always like your small stuff, you know. Yeah.
So the first game I played on itch, the small stuff, was a game called Tans, if you remember that one.
Yeah.
It was described as a relaxation game, and I will say I only played it for a few minutes. I didn't feel really relaxed because I didn't really know what the initial goal was, but was that the first game you uploaded on there?
I think there are some like hidden projects that are like super, super not ready for public. I made that game, I think, while I was still in university and I was just bored.
You were just bored, so you just made a game?
Yeah. I mean, it's not a very complicated game, and it doesn't even have like, in my opinion, like very good design, or it doesn't have a goal and such, but it was just like interesting to play around with like Unity particles and add this trail element to just some triangles and then make it follow your mouse. And it's kind of like the word Tanz means dance, German to English, so I found it's kind of like this dance between, I don't even remember, I think squares attack you. It's like the squares come towards you, but you want to like kind of save them up and then like not collect them. And then when you collect a bunch, you want to like dive into them in a way, and then your score goes up. Made in an afternoon.
Okay, made that in an afternoon. Yeah. It's fun. Yeah. It's fun to see the progression, I guess, between the games, because I played the latest game that you uploaded first, so I kind of was going down the ladder, okay. Which I will say that latest game was pretty good. I was not good at it, but the second to latest game I saw, it said it was a thesis game called Fruit Juicer, which you just hit fruits. What was that game like to make?
Yeah, that was part of like my bachelor thesis, which was like, when you boot up the game, there's actually two different, I don't even remember it that much anymore, but there is two different mechanics or dynamics of the game. And after the game concludes, I don't know if that's still in the game or I removed that, there you're like prompted with a survey.
Oh yes, there was a very long survey.
I compared the surveys then for my thesis, and then I wrote about if there was anything to find in the different approaches. I think it had to do with like rewards, but I honestly don't remember that much. But again, it was very simplistic. I didn't.
It was a very simple game because you just tapped the fruits in a row, and
yeah.
I didn't answer all the questions in the questionnaire at the end. I hope that's okay.
That is okay. Like I was like, there was like set up like a little MongoDB database, and then like the game just sent the answers there so that I could work with them and see them. But all that is offline right now, so I don't even know.
Oh, my questions went out into the void, but that's okay. You had a couple more games on there that were a little more simplistic. I'll just glaze over those. A game called Japtis. Do you remember that one?
That's short for Just Another Post-Process Top-Down Shooter in Space. And that's basically also one of those. I was kind of bored and had to pass an afternoon. So I made a game with like no graphics, just like black background. In Unity, you go into the post-processing effects and you turn up Bloom, you turn up the fisheye, you turn up everything, and then it kind of like gets the space feeling, and then
you made a very simple game.
Very simple. Again, one of those I kind of was bored. Yeah,
just bored, and you make a top-down shooting game.
Now that I look at it, you know, a little bit, this was before Tiny Rogues for sure, so like it already went a bit into that direction with like the black background and being a top-down shooter and stuff. So yeah,
the next game I wasn't able to play because it was a puzzle game that you needed friends, so I can't really say anything about this one. It was just true or false, but it seemed like the name was what the game is.
That was like for a game jam, and the theme was something about like it's a lie or like lying or something. And I think there has never been a full round played of that because it's kind of like long, and during the game jam showcase we only had like 5 minutes and everybody kind of like lost interest too. It's not the most exciting one. It's kind of like, I don't even remember. I think it's like it gives you random facts and then people have to vote if it's true or false, and then like
that seems like a good concept for a game. I don't know if it would be
It's kind of like, you know, like a Jackbox Party minigame, but like as its own
standalone thing.
Standalone thing.
The next game on here, actually, I feel like you really went like from one step to like five in terms of graphics and mechanics, but it also was kind of like, you know, the classic vampire survivors genre, you know that one?
Yeah.
The genre
it was
that
Nuclear Champions.
Yeah, Nuclear Champions. Yeah.
And that was actually, I worked on that with two friends. And that was short, like we worked on that like shortly before I started to work on Tiny Rogues. And I don't know, I guess the next game is the Tiny Rogues prototype. I don't know if you tried that one.
I didn't try that one, but I did see that there. And I was very curious to try it. I should have tried it.
It's an interesting experience, but so basically I was working on a roguelike project that was like super Enter the Gungeon inspired, which was called Shurika, which is kind of like a word mix of the two words shuriken and Eureka, like the scientist screamed. And it was like, first it was supposed to be like a wave shooter kind of thing. Funnily enough, that was all like before Vampire Survivors popped up.
I was going to ask, because Vampire Survivors has been out for a few years now.
And then I was kind of like not happy with like the wave shooter concept, which is mind-blowing considering that like literally a year or 2 years later that Vampire Survivors popped up and like took the world by storm. Like, and I was basically working on a kind of similar game. Like it had, you know, everything we know and love today, like drafting, like pick one of three, place a turret, shoot Shadow Shuriken, shoot Burning Shuriken. I just wasn't like good enough at pixel art to like kind of convey it. So I was always very unhappy with it. And I think I spent an entire year on Shurika and I was never really happy with it. And then I took a break like shortly after Christmas. And then actually Vampire Survivors came out and it kind of like, I mean, it didn't even blow up at that point yet, but me and my friends, we played it for a few days and we really enjoyed it. But then the thing was, we were sitting in Discord and it was like everybody's playing Vampire Survivors, but we are game developers, we could just like make a multiplayer Vampire Survivors. So that was the idea behind Nuclear Champions. The unfortunate part is that like my two friends, they were like doing their master.
Oh, so they like, didn't have much time.
I stopped after my bachelor and my two friends were working on their master. So like, you know, their projects came up and homework and stuff and like having to study. So like, I kind of like stopped working on it. They kind of got busy with other stuff. And then I think I went back to Shurika for a while before like burning out of that again. And then the Tiny Rogues prototype that is also on the itch.io page is actually like my attempt of being like, I need to reset my mind. I'm bored. Let's just make a roguelike within 2 weeks or like one. I think it was 2 weeks. It was sometimes I say 1 week. It might have been 1 week and then I extended it. So
two
like
weeks
that,
to make Tiny Rogues prototype?
Yeah, that's Tiny Rogues prototype, and that happened within, let's say, 10 days or whatever. And then my friends, while being at university, loved Tiny Rogues so much, they always were like during lectures, grinding Tiny Rogues, the prototype, and being like, oh my God. Then I was like, okay, screw Shurika. Let's just start a new project and make Tiny Rogues 2 with all the features that like didn't fit in those 2 weeks and like more enemies, more weapons, more everything. And then I spent like, I think it was 7 to 9 months developing Tiny Rogues, and then I released it on Steam. So yeah, and like nowadays we often talk about Nuclear Champions, but I kind of like fell out of love with the survivor genre a little bit personally. So now I don't really have drive anymore to finish it. But that's also like looking back, it would have been kind of crazy to be like this game was kind of playable. It was really laggy and had technical performance issues and stuff. But like 2 months after Vampire Survivors boom, we would have been the persons who like pushed the multiplayer,
Vampire Survivors in the market. Yeah.
Like, I mean, we kind of like failed by not doing that. But yeah, like we are.
Well, you can't force something if you don't like it. So.
Yeah, you know, and now it's like not really something special anymore. I think there are already co-op.
I was going to ask you what your opinion on that genre is, because every time I open up Steam and try to find new games to play or just games in my email, I have a million, you called them action auto battlers. I call them horde survivors, but we can just call them vampire survivor style games for people that may not know what it are. What do you think of that genre? Do you feel like it's oversaturated like I do?
Well, I have a lot of things to say about those games. First of all, from a developer perspective, they are like super fun to make.
Oh.
Like it's very easy to like spawn an enemy and like move it to the player, you know, like the enemy doesn't need like good AI or need to know about its environments, like, or like dash around, jump around like Tiny Rogues enemies or like whatever. They just like move towards you. That's like super easy to make. It's like 2 minutes of work. And then like you just implement cool weapons and special effects. And you like, so like it's a fun genre to make. And during game jams, even I'm sometimes like, dude, what if we just like vampire survivify this like genre? So like I can get it from like a developer perspective why it's so popular, because it's so easy and quick to make and it's fun to make. Then there is the point where I feel like we all kind of like, and with we, I say we developers, we took the wrong lessons from Vampire Survivors. We kind of like all thought this, like, in my opinion, it's quite dull gameplay was the thing to take away from it. But I feel like what we should have taken away from it is how like well Vampire Survivors does like gamifying stuff, like when you open the chests and the animation and how awesome it feels. Yeah. And stuff like even like putting the XP into like these like crystals and stuff. Like before all the games on the market, you know, like you kill the monster and you gain the XP, like kind of invisible, but like putting it into like this little pickup felt so good. So like there is lessons to be learned from Vampire Survivors that are like really, really valuable. But I feel like everybody just kind of like turned it into an action auto battler where you don't do anything. To me, it kind of lacks agency, and I don't like it.
Do you feel like it's a good starting point for developers, though? I don't have any development knowledge, so I think, like you said, they're easy to make. Do you think they're like a good get your foot in the door type of game to get yourself into development?
Sure, they are like kind of like a double-edged sword, because while they are very simple, when you kind of like start to scale them up, they can be like technically, or on a technical level, they can be very advanced, because you deal with a lot of entities. I don't know, anybody who ever played Minecraft and then like spawned 100 monsters or whatever, then it's like the game starts lagging. What's up with that or whatever? And you need to start to optimize in your engine and stuff and make sure that your game isn't like a lag fest. So like that's difficult, but as long as you like kind of like keep it in certain boundaries, I think it's a good project. You also don't have to deal with like physics and stuff. A lot of people will jump to like making jump and runs and stuff.
Yeah.
And like those games can be like very complicated on like the game feel, because it's not easy to make it like feel intuitive and feel good. Like not every like a lot of work goes into like making it feel as good as like Celeste or whatever, right? Like that's not something you do in an afternoon. Yeah, so I'd actually say, yeah, like, you know, like no gravity, it's like fun to make. Yeah. And
all right,
quick to make.
So, yeah. Yeah, nice and simple. Now that you mentioned that, I want to ask this. I was going to ask this later, but I'm just asking it now. What genres do you feel like are people too ambitious about when they get started? Because I've asked this on stream before, and a couple other developers do watch, and they say like Metroidvanias, because I like to play those a lot. They say Metroidvanias are very hard to make. What do you think about that?
I don't even like know that much about like Metroidvanias. I feel like everybody just...
They are
I have
quite
to,
complicated.
I have to look at this from like two perspectives, because I can look at this from like my game designer perspective, where like I have a lot of hot takes and a lot of, I guess at this point, also knowledge and stuff. But then there is also like the part of just like, let's just make a game. It doesn't like let's not think about like how innovative is it or like what the game design is. So I'd say in general, Metroidvania is probably like difficult to make this because it's kind of like an open world game. Like it's like a long game too. Like when you think about them, you think about Metroid and Castlevania, obviously.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like a lot of enemies, a lot of bosses, you want like upgrades. Like it's a full game experience. It's not like something quick arcadey to make. So like, yeah. And then if you, on top of that, make it like a side scroller and stuff, then you add kind of like the complexity that I talked about of like making a good movement controller and dealing with gravity and stuff, which makes it even more complex, right? Like in Tiny Rogues, an enemy has an easier time pathfinding to you. In fact, it doesn't need to pathfind at all because it's just rectangles. But if you take like a game like Super Mario, I mean, a Goomba runs from left to right, but let's imagine you want like something a little bit more sophisticated, and suddenly you need to like teach your monster how to jump and how to chase after the player and stuff. So like it can like ramp in difficulty of making it very quickly, I feel. And that's not even like touching on like the scope that Metroidvanias are or like entail. And also like if you want to make a good Metroidvania, I feel like you want to like pump it with content, because people are going to compare you to like, well, this game only has two bosses. Why wouldn't I just play Hollow Knight where I can fight against 30 bosses and stuff? You know, like, so like there is a certain level of content associated with different genres, and you kind of like want to deliver on that front, like in a way. So yeah.
They're hard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that you talked about Tiny Rogues, I do want to talk about it, but I also want to mention the last game that you made on itch.io, which I think I saw you tweet about it initially when you made it as a game jam game, and it was Match Parade. Yeah. That game was actually, I played it a few times and I thought I did pretty good winning in 2 minutes, but it turns out like the world record for that game is like 50 seconds, and I felt, I didn't feel the greatest. So what was that game? Was it like, I don't even know how to word it. Yeah, that how was developing like, that?
That was like way beyond Tiny Rogues. That was like, I think this year I made that. And it was for a game jam from like a Discord with a few developers. And we kind of had this a restriction of using like this card asset pack. And yeah, at first I didn't have an idea, but then I saw the cards also have like these Uno cards in a way. So I got the idea to like match them. And then I just made a high score chaser out of it in a way. I think it really shows how like, because that game was like, actually, I don't remember how quickly I made it. I definitely spent less than a week on it. And like, I think it
game
shows
jams
how
are typically fast.
Yeah. It showed how good I am suddenly at like making things feel good in a game, like making this punch and like adding a little particle or a shake here and there and like doing that quickly and getting more eye for it, I feel like. So that's like one of the things I took away from it.
I mean, it was a very, very fun little game, that's for sure. You might have some potential there after Tiny Rogues, which is your big ambition for sure, because you still have like a handful of giant updates planned for Tiny Rogues.
I think like Match Parade, which is what it was called, is like, it's like, I don't know if it's weird to say that, but in my mind, it's a little bit away from just like polishing a little bit, fixing it, making good leaderboards and stuff. And then like I could throw it for like $1 on Steam or whatever. I don't know. Like I feel like it's at that state already, which is kind of cool. Like,
it's such a simple game.
Be able to say that, yeah.
Now, I want to ask this because when I was doing some research on you, because I got to research you a little bit, when you started Tiny Rogues, it said you were a part-time software developer while working on Tiny Rogues every day. Is that still the case, or is Tiny Rogues like your full-time commitment right now?
It has been like, basically it has been full-time commitment since November 2022, I think.
Oh, a couple of years. Isn't that when it got into early
so
access?
It launched in September, and it immediately like made enough money where I was like, yep, I'm done with working this job. I was kind of like, even like in, you know, like every game kind of like you crunch and you work a lot on it. So I was definitely like slacking a bit and taking a lot of vacation and taking a lot of vacation days that I didn't even have during the launch phase of Tiny Rogues. So, and at that point, I was also like super burned out already on like that job, which makes sense because I worked so much on Tiny Rogues during my free time that then during work time, I actually had like no brain left almost for it. So yeah, it was like, yeah, you know, there is no, usually like you can't quit a job that quickly, but I kind of like asked my boss and was like, dude, I'm useless here. Let's find a way that we can end our working relationship quickly. And since then I'm full-time dev, and I always tell people, you know, like when you see a game on Steam with like 1,000 reviews, that's like a life-changing amount of money for developers, and like to me too. And Tiny Rogues is so successful, I can like keep making games for years now personally.
For years.
So I'm like super happy with that. I mean, it also depends where you live. I'd imagine if you were like, I don't know, living in a apartment in New York,
you're probably gonna have more expenses.
Like $100K, then like, okay, Tiny Rogues will not make you develop games for years, but then again, like, I don't know which game would in a way, right?
Yeah.
But for me, I live a simple life. So
So as a solo developer, if you if us the consumer see like 5,000, 10,000, because you have like 10,000 reviews on Steam, 11,000 if I'm not mistaken, overwhelmingly positive, really? Like 98%. You have a lot. That is more than enough for a single developer to continue making games.
In my opinion, definitely. But it like, I talk a lot to other developers, and it's really hard to judge it because everybody has a different living situation. Everybody has different tech situations. And on top of that, some people, you know, they sign publishers, and it can easily take a big chunk of your money. And then like, so Steam takes 30%. Let's say your publisher takes 30%, and then your government takes like another 30%.
You got
and then
10%.
It's kind of like, yeah, that is like not that well anymore. But I think, yeah, any game with like 10,000 reviews plus, you can be, I think, sure that the developer is not like on the brink of starving or whatever. Like, that's just not how math
works. Yeah, there's also a lot of other variant factors that I should have mentioned with the type of game they're making, how many assets they need. But you mentioned publishing, and I am unaware with publishing and 100% how it works. I know publishers help fund the game, but you're self-published. Did you not reach out to any publishers, or did you just find it was more cost-effective to do everything yourself?
I didn't plan on Tiny Rogues like being this successful and big. It was basically just my stepping stone, like getting like sell. Like the goal was put a game on Steam and be able to like earn like I said, like sell one copy or like earn $100 from it or whatever. That's that was the goal, and I knew I can do that myself, and I wanna like experience how everything works. How does it work to set up a company? How does it work to set up the game, the Steam page, make your own trailer? How does it work to, where do you get a splash art, the logo and stuff like that, right? Like, I want to like get a big overview of all of that personally so that I know it for my future in game development. So eventually when I work with people that do this for me, I kind of know what they have to do. And then like, it's also like, you know, if you're in charge of a company or whatever, you want to like know what people do so that you're not fooled. So I like it was never how to phrase this. I never thought about getting a publisher for Tiny Rogues
because you didn't think it was gonna do as well as it did.
Yeah, okay, exactly.
That makes sense. So
now
like
I'm also like notorious for, or like known for, being the guy who tells people you don't need a publisher, even though like a lot of my developer friends and stuff, they speak highly from their publishers, and like, you know, like publishers have contacts, have marketing options, I guess. But I am always a voice for, nowadays you don't need a publisher anymore. Yeah. And it can also, like, you know, benefit you because, like, if your publisher wastes your money on marketing that is, like, outdated or whatever, you rather, like, take your own money and put it somewhere where you know it's good marketing, which, in my opinion, I don't know, a lot of publishers these days can't be trusted in that way because they don't know as much as somebody like me does, who, like, spent a last 15 years, or how old am I? I'm 27. So yeah, like 15 years on Twitch and own 3D and in YouTube gaming. And I watch every creator and I talk to people and I talk to people on Reddit and I have gaming friends. Like I am way more in the thicket than any like manager of like a publisher or whatever would ever be. And I think that also like helped me with like Tiny Rogues because I knew whom or like, yeah, where should I shoot an email at and what's a possibility for marketing. And also like when designing a game, it matters, you know, like you really like want to speak to gamers, and a lot of game developers are not in in the thicket to know like what do people like. But like I knew like people like items, people like stats, people like finding legendaries and stuff. You know?
Yeah.
And like, that's how you get people. And that's how you sell a game, I guess, in my opinion.
Well, with marketing, it's good timing with marketing, I guess, because I know you have seen the recent discourse by the YouTuber Olexa, who made that, I say, good tweet about indie games and has received some backlash from some developers. And I feel we will be in agreement where content creators are like, do you think content creators are like an indie developer's like best friend in terms of marketing?
Like, I tend to like, how do I say it? Like, first of all, yes, I agree. Like, content creators, bread and butter, most important thing. You need the content creators because they, like, hype your game. They bring an audience. And then after that audience picked up your game, then you can suddenly rely on, like, Steam's stuff like the Steam algorithm. The Steam algorithm doesn't help you at all if you're unknown. But you know, if like a big YouTuber or whatever brings a wave of people to buy your game, then the algorithm, I might be actually wrong on that. I don't follow any like how to market your game stuff. I could be completely wrong with that. But in my experience, it's like you use the content creators to then like leverage like the Steam algorithm and like newspapers, news magazines, news articles online. And stuff, right? Like that's how, and like word of mouth is also important. In Steam, you have your friend list, and if somebody plays a game there, do you see, oh my god, they've been playing this game for like 3 days. What is this game?
I need to play it too.
So yeah, definitely. I mean, I still am so thankful to Retromation, who like immediately played Tiny Rogues, and
oh, I love
he's quite. Quite the big content creator. And
oh, yeah, in the roguelike like scene.
He and you and Olexa and, like, all the people, you're doing God's work out there. Like, no matter how small of a content creator you are, I still tune into, like, content creators with, like, 10 viewers or whatever.
Oh, yeah, because, that's like, 10 people right there that could be enjoying your game.
It's so important, exactly. It's so important to, like, this entire sphere. And I try to be... I like to give my hot takes and stuff on Twitter, and like I don't have Twitter blue and stuff, so like I need to keep myself short. But yeah, I can imagine that for like some game genres, it's like very hard because I don't know. Like when I think I'm making kind of like a mix of Gungeon, Diablo, and Isaac, I just think like, okay, like you gotta like message Retromation, Northern Lion, you gotta message you and stuff. Like you gotta message, I don't know, Bear Taffy, people. But then, I don't know, like, if you'd make, like, something more obscure, like a puzzle platformer, like, whom, like,
yeah,
I'm not in that sphere.
You gotta do
I
a lot of research for that.
So I just, like, try to not seem too arrogant because, like, there is different genres. And I feel like Tiny Rogues is, like, a blessing because I love to make Tiny Rogues. It's the exact game that I like to play, but it's also a game that a shit ton... Sorry for using shit.
No worries. I swear all the time.
Like, they would also like to play, but there is definitely people out there who, like, make a historically accurate card game. Single player, I don't know. That's a storyline, visual novel. And that's like, okay, like, you might just be, like, in a bracket where not as many people... want to play that, but like for me it was very simple because like top down roguelike shooter items upgrades, that's like everybody eats that up, and I also like am very fulfilled and satisfied working on this game because I love it. So I am lucky in that case. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, lucky that you, I mean, I do think even if someone makes a roguelike game, you need to have a good formula with it and like an actual good product, because I get tons of emails that I need to respond to. Sorry to the developers that email me. I get tons of emails, and sometimes the games just, they don't really look, I don't want to say bad, but they just don't look super inspired, you know? But
yeah, I definitely get that. I'm like, I know people that try every game and they can see the good in every game, and they look at a game and they're like, wow, this looks awesome. And we kind of like talk about this like window shopping effect where you like see a screenshot or see like 10 seconds of a game and it leaves an impression. Like, do you want to play it? Do you not want to play it?
Yep.
I am like one of those persons that in 90% of games, I look at them and I'm like, what is this? I never want to touch this even. Like, I am super oblivious. Never, if somebody ever like messages me, what do you think of my game? Don't ask me. I am a person, I had a bet going on with like a friend that was about like backpack battles. And I was like, I don't know if this is going to be successful. It looks kind of weird to me. And they were like, you know, nothing. This is going to blow up. And what happened? You know,
backpack battle. I feel like it blew up more in the demo than when it fully released, but still it blew up for sure.
They did very well. And like, it's an awesome game now. And I just like always think about like Game of Thrones and like, you know, nothing, Jon Snow. And so it's like, you know, nothing, Ruby Dev, because like, I am oblivious. I look at a game and I'm like, what is this? I would never make this. I would never play this. Yeah. I mean, it took me like 2 years to play Protator.
Oh man, that's a great game. The way indie devs market their game at times, for Brotato, I got that game in my email, and all, I'm blanking on who made Brotato. Oh God, what's their name?
Blobfish.
He emailed me, and the email was literally just, here's my game, enjoy, with a Steam key. And I was just like, okay. And Brotato is obviously like the biggest arena shooter out there. Just added co-op, but I can't remember what your email said. I think your email initially went to spam, which sometimes I do check. But
yeah, my email was a crazy one because it was, so I kind of personalized every email, which is something I would not advise on.
I think that's still good though.
I did go to their YouTube channel, and then, you know, if I saw like, oh, I saw you play a lot of The Binding of Isaac, and I made a game that is kind of like that, I would put that in. That was like my level of personalization. Or like, I saw you play Hades. Hey, I made kind of like a scuffed Hades, so maybe you're interested. That's kind of my level of email personalization that I put into my emails. But I also had this part of like, I made this game. It's a mix of Archvale, Enter the Gungeon, Nuclear Throne, Diablo 3, Path of Exile, Dark Souls, and like, I think there were like two more games or whatever. So like, then people kind of like, some people I caught off guard with that, and they were like, this sounds like a curious mix of games, you know. And then that's, for example, I think how I got Retromation, because he like mentioned that immediately in his first video, where like the dev talks about this is like a game abomination of like 10 different games. So yeah, like, it worked out for me. But I also had like a key and a link to the trailer in it and the basics.
That's something that I feel a lot of developers struggle with, is actually like selling their game. Like, when I look for a game, the key is obviously very nice to give a free key out. But a lot of developers don't link their Steam game. They don't sell their game. They don't personalize it, which isn't as necessary. But like, they don't link anything about the game. They just give me a wall of text of what the game is. And it's like, well, I need some links. I don't want to Google random game that I've never heard of, because then I don't know what's going to pop up. Am I looking at the right game? So I think you did a very good job on your marketing, for sure, for doing everything yourself.
I'm like a big fan of this. There's a word for this. When you do this pitch of, my thing is like this, but with a twist in a way. Like, right, like, I made The Binding of Isaac, but I don't know, blah, blah, blah.
I think Ludwig calls that the yoink and twist.
The yoink and twist, exactly. I really like that personally. I don't know if content creators like it too, but I feel like it makes a lot of sense, because if you are a channel with 1,000 Isaac episodes, then you might not be that interested if somebody messages you with, I made Celeste, but it's in space. But if somebody is like, I made Isaac, but it's with knights, I don't know. Like, I mean, a little bit simple, maybe, but not very inspired.
It 100% works. Like, Like in my email, if I see someone mention like Enter the Gungeon, you have me immediately hooked in because of how much I liked it. It's just that simple.
But I feel like, you know, I don't know. Now I'm going to throw out a question. I feel like bullet hells and top-down shooters, while I would also count them into this genre of is fun to make, is easy to make, you know, like moving projectiles, it's fun. The player movement is easy. They're not popular currently. There's very few bullet hell games. Yeah. We only got the Bullet Heavens, which are the Vampire Survivor-likes. And then like it's all like roguelike, deck builder, auto battler.
Deck builder has taken over.
There is not much Enter the Gungeon Nuclear Throne stuff anymore. Like we are kind of past that. And it's, I think, also something that went well for me because I kind of like snuck past this hype train of bullet heavens and deck builders. And then there's suddenly like, oh, there is still like a bullet hell, a traditional bullet hell game. Those don't come out that much anymore these days. So yeah, while still being familiar, you know,
I miss those type of games. Like, I'm trying to think of the last one that I actually played. Like, Axolotl came out last year. I think that game was good. Had a few things wrong with it, but I think they're still working on that. That's a good one. Axolotl. I genuinely can't think of, like, any. Like, Nova Drift recently came out, but that's...
Nova Drift recently, yeah.
That's, like, there's Asteroids.
There's the one with, like, you play as, like, an asteroid, and you swing... Like the enemy projectiles will enter your orbit and you fling them back.
Astero Rogues, I think that one's called or something.
Is it Astero Rogues? That one is really cool.
And I've had that one in my backlog. Yeah. I've had that one in my backlog for so long and I just haven't been able to pick it up yet.
Not played it myself, but I've like watched quite a few streams and videos of it and it seems like
a little really cool. Gym.
Definitely.
All right. Well, we can go back to Tiny Rogues because I did write down a bunch of questions, but I love the discussions that we've been having so far. So I want to ask you as a developer a couple smaller things in the development cycle and see if you think they are, I guess, a vital thing to have while making a game.
Sure.
So I guess the first one would be something that I personally love, and if a game doesn't have it, I'm more inclined to not play it, and it's achievements. Do you find them to be a necessity? Are they hard to implement? And your achievements, by the way, are great because they're all named after classic rock songs.
Yeah. Or like, not just rock songs. There's also some pop is mixing in it and stuff, yeah. Achievements are something that was not that much on my radar when I made Tiny. Like, I think every game should have achievements. Like, it's like a basic feature of Steam and it's like too free to not do. But there are games that go hard on achievements, and there's like The Binding of Isaac and The Void Reigns Upon Her Heart. Like those stand out. There's like thousands of achievements or like hundreds, like, and I've talked to a lot of achievement chasers online that are also like, oh, you gotta add more achievements to Tiny Rogues, you know, like I'm addicted, I need more achievements. And I'm more of a developer that says like I want to add achievements that matter. And even in Tiny Rogues there's a lot of achievements that I just kind of threw in to like please achievement hunters a bit more, which I'm personally not a fan of, but also I'm not an achievement hunter, so to me it's a little bit of that. I don't know. Tiny Rogues would probably never become a game with like 1,000 achievements.
That is a little too much.
You know, I could do that. I could do like go to hell as the Pyromancer, defeat heaven as the Pyromancer, defeat
those achievements. The Shadow Realm, like, that gets so tedious for someone like me.
Do it on Cinder 16, do it on Cinder 12. Blah, blah. You know, I can multiply my achievements artificially, and I feel like to a certain degree, some games do that, but I rather like sum up achievements where it's like defeat Primal Death with all characters or whatever, right? Like, and then that's one achievement, and other games would maybe make 50 out of those. So I think it's definitely a thing that every game needs, and how hard you go in it is like developer's decision.
I'm with you on that. I think
10 10 minimum. Every game should have 10 minimum.
I'm with you on that, because when I see a game that has like beat the game like 18 different times for one achievement each with all these different characters, it's like, okay, well, I don't really want to do all that sometimes. It just adds to the ever-flowingness of trying to 100% it. But I do like your achievements. I was playing Tiny Rogues yesterday. I was trying to get one of the achievements where you beat death with the doppelganger, but change like the ability that the doppelganger has every floor. And I forgot to change the doppelganger's ability on the 10th floor, so I didn't get the achievement. But like an achievement like that, I find to be very unique and fun, because you have your run changes up so much every single level.
You said this is like small questions that I maybe should answer quickly, but
no, you can answer them as long as you want. Don't worry.
I look at achievements in like three categories. The one is like an actual achievement, like kind of like a content goal. Like, I don't know, like let's take Path of Exile or Diablo and you defeat the final boss, right? Like that's a thing. Then there is kind of like collecting things, and like, I don't know, like it would be like Banjo-Kazooie, collect every, I don't even remember what it was, like notes or whatever in every level. So like you can do that kind of stuff. And then there is kind of like the more, I have no name for them, but the ones that you just mentioned, like doppelganger, change everything, like, I don't know, inspiring the player to do something weird or odd, and like, it's a bit artificial. And those are the achievements that I actually don't like that much, because to me it's kind of like just adding an achievement so somebody
does some weird thing.
And I would rather like actually provide real content, right? Like, to me, it's I'm that kind of gamer personally, but
and that's fine.
All three are valid, you know. And I try to keep a mix of all three. Yeah.
All right. Well, here's the next. This one's kind of a big question, so this one could be a big answer. But I thought of this last night while I was sleeping. I was thinking of this podcast all night, coming up with questions, but. With major updates, you have a lot of them planned, of course. Do you try to plan these updates to be released when it's kind of like a lull in gaming with like a lack of major releases, whether it be like roguelites or AAA games coming out? Do you try to plan them so that people will go back to your game because there's nothing else coming out? Like a recent example for this is the Rogue Prince of Persia. They delayed their early access release by like 2 weeks because Hades 2 shadow dropped out of nowhere. So do you think that is a good thing to do as an indie developer?
I think it's a hard thing to do as an indie developer, because I feel like you can never find a spot these days where nothing will like be released at the same time. Like when Tiny Rogues released, Rogue Genesia was in hype, and then 1 week or like later or at the same day or whatever, the Shovel Knight roguelike released, right?
Oh yeah.
The Tiny Rogues blew both games, if I remember correctly. I don't remember about Rogue Genesia, but it blew both out of the water, even though like, you know, like Shovel Knight is like
a huge IP in the indie game sphere.
Huge IP and everything. So like, you can never know. Just make the best game and then release it. I honestly, the one thing I found out over the last 2 years is the bigger the content patch gets, the worse I am at like planning anything. So it's very hard for me to set a date or whatever. The last big expansion came out around Christmas, which I thought was a great idea.
Oh, yeah.
It actually turned out that it wasn't that great of an idea, but I don't know why. I don't remember 100%, but I remember I would probably never do like a December 20th release again. The last update, or like sometimes I even like do the opposite, where like I do updates that I want to like have less eyes on them and draw less attention. So like at that point it can be like helpful to do an update for a game when something else drops, because then like people can, you know, there's still gonna be some people who play it and they can find bugs and issues, and then I can fix them and I don't have like a big shitstorm against me or whatever. So like I do that sometimes.
I remember,
but in
when...
general,
no, continue.
I don't know. Like in general, the only thing that I do as a Path of Exile player is that I usually try to like not hit the same week that is a Path of Exile league
so
release.
So you can play Path of Exile.
Yeah, I want to play there myself, and I know that a lot of people also play there. So I usually just slot in somewhere else then, yeah.
With the,
But if other games should do it or not, I mean, sure, you can pay a little bit of attention, but...
Don't worry about it too much, you think?
Don't worry too much. The biggest problem is going to be the thing that Wonderbot talks about as well, like... content creator bandwidth, and if there is like a lot of games that people play and that are new already, then it's like hard to like get somebody to make a video about your game. So yeah, but it's kind of easy to check because I don't know, for me it's like you go on to somebody's YouTube channel and they just got done uploading Brotato to episode 128 and nothing else comes up for like weeks, then it's like, yep, I have a chance here, you know, like,
yeah.
But if it's like showcase, this transitions into a series, then it's kind of like a problem, you know, because there's no space for you.
Yeah, with your last update, you said it was bad timing, but the last major update, I guess, it was between Heaven and Hell in Tiny Rogues. I remember it. You reached out and sponsored me. Thank you for that. That was awesome. I thought that update was very good. It did have its negatives, in my opinion. The biggest negative, and I remember a lot of people's biggest negative, was with how much text was on the screen to read, which I was fine with reading some text. I can read, but I can understand that you have to appeal to the short attention span that a lot of people have nowadays. Did you feel like that was a major priority to fix, even with it being released around the holidays?
I recently fixed all of that, or like I fixed it to a degree where I am happy now with the amount of text.
Oh yeah.
But it happens very rarely that games go this hard on like trying to improve their systems and reworking everything. I just was very unhappy with the previous implementation of Tiny Rogues, where it's like what I consider dull these days, like, oh, okay, 30% attack speed draft. I don't know, like, is that really that interesting? Not to me. So I really wanted to improve that. And then another big point of critique that Tiny Rogues always got was like, there is not enough information. What does this do? What does that do? So for Heaven and Hell, I kind of like overcompensated. There was so much new stuff, but I also tried to like make sure that everything is explained everywhere. I was far from doing that, but I tried it, and it was a lot of crunch and it was like very ambitious. I just used a lot of words to convey the information, and sometimes the information was useless. And so the most recent update cleaned it up. There is still items that have a lot of text, but I'm personally fine with it. I think like Tiny Rogues will always be one of those games where like an effect might be three lines long, but
it conveys what you need to know.
Yeah, it also needs that because a certain complexity can also be appealing in these games. Like, again, it's I kind of like make Tiny Rogues for myself in a way, and I don't find it that appealing anymore to like, if I get offered a big draft of three things and it's plus 30% damage, plus 30% attack speed, and plus one health, I'm like kind of disappointed because I'm like, I'm always picking the best one. There is not really build crafting here and stuff. And that's kind of like what I love about Path of Exile, you know, like looking at the big skill tree. What am I going to pick up? Which unique items and legendaries do I combo together and stuff like that? So like, I want to like make a roguelike that also invokes those feelings. And sometimes it just takes a little bit of text to convey the effect, and I'm fine with that personally. So
yeah. I played yesterday, and the text I felt was at a perfect amount. I also liked all the changes that I did notice, mostly with the classes having like a little secondary ability with the right mouse button. I thought that was a great change. I also think your meta progression is kind of quite unique compared to everything else. And it's not just the simple stuff like you said, where you just get more damage, more health, all of that. You have stuff that really changes up the run and can really lead to a bust and run. But, you know, you got to do the research and figure out what you want. So good job there.
I think the only thing that I might be a little bit unhappy with still, but this is going to be very hard to iron out over the coming patches and everything, is games also need to do a certain level of onboarding. So I'm kind of like having this idea. I recently watched an episode of Olexa playing Tiny Rogues. I don't know, like it randomly came up and is like,
oh, was it the spin in the wheel roguelite? Yeah. I was able to watch about half of that.
And then like on the first trade selection, he like got offered 4 and they all were kind of like text heavy immediately. So it was kind of like, oh my God, lot of text suddenly appeared. So like, I feel like it would help if games or like Tiny Rogues, you know, like you can ease players into it. And it also makes sense from a build perspective. So I'm looking into maybe on the first trade selection, it should be more like foundational traits, like, oh, this grants spinning orbitals or whatever, like something easy to understand, not a lot of text. And then the later it gets into the run, the more specific things that bombard you with text could appear more often. So I'm looking into stuff like that. I also tried it on like a meta level where like the ranger and the knight and the sorcerer have like really simple passive abilities compared to, I don't know, pirate, who is like the 31st character to unlock or whatever.
You got so many characters in there.
It's fine if pirate has like a big wall of text as an ability. But I think like ranger is probably the second class everybody plays because you die as the hero and then you unlock this bow guy and it's a top-down shooter. So let's play the bow guy. That guy should probably not front you with that wall of text. So I'm like growing and learning and adapting Tiny Rogues. And sometimes it can, you know, not work because if somebody like Olexa returns to his Tiny Rogue saves after 5 months of not playing, then like those systems would not work because the game kind of like assumes, hey, you just got done with defeating heaven or whatever, you're fully into the game, so like you can never fix this 100%, but I definitely want to take like some more steps into onboarding during a run a little bit better, which I think could be like really, really good for the game. Yeah,
I feel like that would probably benefit more to the people that have just started out compared to the people like Olexa. Because like for people like Olexa or even me in this point, you stop playing for 5 months, you still kind of know what to expect going into the game because you've played it for 50-100 hours. But I understand what you mean. I feel like it's a new player, they'll be overwhelmed immediately with all the options and all the reading and whatnot. So yeah, that's pretty smart. Now, I'm running out of questions to ask, which is good because like, we've been killing this.
One more thing is just like, even from, it's not just like from overwhelming the player perspective that this feature would make sense. I feel like also like from a build crafting perspective, it kind of like makes sense to like lay a foundation. You know, like some traits are like very specific and super in deep already. And if the first draft offers that option, it's kind of never an option, and that's kind of not fun. Like, again, like I want to like offer drafts that are interesting to the player. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
About it. But that's a tangent.
I remember you, the last major update, you teased the next like 3 major updates. And I'm blanking on the name of the next one, but do you have any ideas? Have you been crunching, I guess you could say, for that next one, or are you kind of taking a more steady pace?
I announced 3 expansions after Between Heaven and Hell. And some people ask me, like, how do I even come up with that? But funnily enough, this podcast, we talked about, like, the Tiny Rogues prototype.
Yeah.
And there, like, believe me or not, but there is, like, a super scuffed Google document. And it details, you know, stuff like go into the abyss after defeating death and blah, blah, blah. So like that's for me features that have been planned for like 3 years now. So it's not something that I added on to Scope Creep. It's literally the reason why I ticked the early access box, like checkbox for Tiny Rogues, is because the game is not done yet. Until this like Google document of like features is like done, the game is not done. So I announced Into the Abyss, and then on the Edge of Infinity and Beyond the Matrix. And basically those are like three big new endgame zones with new endgame bosses and I guess like lore twists or lore points, even though Tiny Rogues is very light on lore.
So
I definitely still work to finish those. And I've not really started on working on those yet. I've been like really busy this year to like clean up the mess that Heaven and Hell left behind in a way. And I also hope that I'm finally done reworking the entire game, because first Heaven and Hell was a big, you know, like going through every weapon, going through every item, finding new effects and stuff. And now like the cleanup update, doing this again, going through every trade, cleaning up, focusing my vision, focusing the game's vision and everything. I just hope that I'm now finally done with like reworking the entire game, which eats a lot of time. And I hope I can like blast some content updates in 2025. At this point, it's been a while since I like worked on boss enemies and stuff. So I don't know how that's going to go in 2025. I also plan to do a little bit of traveling in 2025. But at this point, like I recently read on Twitter that Nova Drift was in development for 10 years.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Nova Drift was there for so long.
It makes me look at that. And I think like, oh God, Tiny Rogues also already 3 years.
I really thought this was going to be like... of time, though. They were in early access since 2019. Like,
I really thought that like Tiny Rogues would be like a 2 year project. So like, but I'm now thinking it's more like four, hopefully not 5 years. So in an ideal scenario, I start blasting next year, but I also am, I learn more and more about overworking myself and burning out. So
I think a lot of content creators can relate to that.
Sometimes I'm just not as quick as I am ambitious. So yeah.
Well, I feel like probably a lot of developers that are in early access probably have like you a whole game plan set out in stone, and it's just a matter of finding the time to do it, cleaning up the game. But that's a very, I'm excited for it because Tiny Rogues is personally one of my favorites. I love Tiny Rogues. Yeah. But god dang, that was basically the last major question, but continue.
When I set out to make Tiny Rogues, I know comparison is the thief of joy, but I compared to Isaac, and I played Isaac in the flash days, but not since then. I kind of like don't vibe with the gameplay that much anymore.
Don't say that out loud, like, people might get mad at you.
I don't like the four directional shooting and stuff, but
yeah,
you know, it adds to Isaac is like claustrophobic, and it's like very, it adds to the atmosphere. The gameplay also adds to it. I just personally don't like it that much these days. But I look at The Binding of Isaac, and I still have this in my mind when I look at roguelikes that release today. We all kind of are like, or like need to catch up. I don't want to say we need to catch up, because like there is games that like Hades that don't have as much content, but they are like way more popular and even like as well received as that game, and they're just like replayable on a different front. But I feel like it's very hard these days to make a roguelike, and then you will be compared to Isaac, which has a legacy of like, I don't know, is it 20 years at this point?
Yeah, it's
and like, it's gonna be a tough battle for any game to ever catch up to the level of content that Isaac has. It has like hundreds of bosses, different floors, different items, different paths. You go to hell, you go into the chest, you go there, you know, and there's always stuff added. It's still being in development. And I feel like I kind of like wanted to create something that eventually starts to rival Isaac. The only problem is I'm one dude, and I'm just starting out. So that's how I came to the conclusion of Tiny Rogue's art style, basically, because I was like, I'm going to need to create a lot of content for this game if I want to compete with the big leagues these days. If I started a new roguelike, I wouldn't even think about it that way, because like I've kind of like grown past this like naive outlook of like, oh, I got to have as much content in my game as Isaac. It's very naive to think that. But nonetheless, Tiny Rogues is still that game that is like on the chase of, I also want 200 bosses in this game, and I want to go into the abyss, and here and there, and I want this system, and I want 50 characters and everything. You know, like I want to be that new game that people look at and are like,
ah, that's the game.
Your roguelike is great. Yeah, your roguelike is great, but it doesn't have as much content as Tiny Rogues. You know, that's like kind of what I want to be. So that's like, it makes me smile to think about. And it's like why so many expansions are planned for it.
I mean, if anything, I think you're probably the closest thing to The Binding of Isaac. Like you said, it's been out for 15 years, 20 years. It's been out for so long, Binding of Isaac. It's had so much time to cook and become what it is. And that's it's the same with any genre, really. Every genre has its own giant in roguelites. You can say that with really any game ever. Like there's Risk of Rain 2 for the third person co-op games, there's Enter the Gungeon for top down shooters, Binding of Isaac for whatever the hell Binding of Isaac is, there's Hades, Darkest Dungeon. And it's so hard to compare, like if you're an indie dev, I imagine hard to compare yourself to those games or even live with the comparisons, because you're, like you said, you're one dude, maybe a couple people. And these studios that made those giants, they're probably big teams and they've been working on the game for years. But I think it's good to have the ambition to be the size of them. But like you said, not to be super naive with it.
Yeah, totally. I still think that like, so for example, the idea that every floor can have different bosses and stuff obviously came from Isaac. And I think more roguelikes need to do that again.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, these days, it's very much, I don't know which game created this, but was it Dead Cells or was it Hades or whatever? But it's very often, like, this is the floor one boss. And after 300 runs,
you destroy them immediately.
Floor one boss. Yeah, and you still fight the same boss, you know? And, like, I feel like just, like, adding variation to a game is a very... I'd say it's not a very sophisticated approach to replayability, but it's one that works and it helps you stumble into greatness. Because if you just make your floor one boss and that's done, then you're done with that. But if you make five floor one bosses, then it will like lead you to iterating on your own work. And then not just the number five will lead to replayability because players want to experience new things, but in general you also get better at like designing stuff, and that also increases replayability. So I think that's definitely a bit of a lost art in roguelikes. I mean, I guess like even classics like Nuclear Throne don't even have variety in that case, but I personally am a fan of that, and I think a lot of games should like look into like spicing up variety a little bit more in their roguelikes.
I can agree with that. Yeah. My favorite roguelites, probably, you know, Enter the Gungeon, best variety. Hades has everything that I kind of like. I would like more variety, like you said. You know, the story's great, combat's great, it has weapon variety, but more bosses is always super nice. I think the thing Dead Cells has going for it is after the first... Well, it has more bosses, but Dead Cells also has 12 DLCs that let you have all these different paths. But I agree with you that more bosses on a basic floor one will help in the long run for sure. And that I had one more question, but it was kind of a joke question that I also thought of before I went to bed. For some reason, this came in my head. And I've seen other games talk about doing this, but they never really do because it's apparently very hard. But co-op Tiny Rogues, what would you say to that? Just that.
Never.
Never.
So I recently answered this in my AMA because there's so many people.
People are like, actually asking about that?
When multiplayer, when co-op, and I'm like Tiny Rogues.
I don't view it as a co-op game personally, but it's something I had to ask. So
we are not even talking about game design issues yet. We are still on a pure technical level, and Tiny Rogues has too many programmer sins in it that it's never going to happen. Like, I mean, people always say like, but modders will edit. And I'm like, that one modder who wants to tackle this project.
That's a big
and
project.
And I'm going to swear here, he's a poor bastard because like nobody wants to be in charge of that work. And it's like an entire rewrite of the entire game, basically, because I know my code base, you know, like, so it's like, okay, then rewrite the entirety of Tiny Rogues. But after that, you still face like issues like, how do you want to do it game design wise, right? Like, I mean, games like Enter the Gungeon have a co-op, but I played that with my friend and we were very disappointed by it. It felt like very tacked on, not very fun. I think to some people it could be fun on like couch co-op maybe, but to us it like was not fun at all, right? Like it's almost like the game didn't even consider it. It's just like, okay, we add another player into it. And even if you did that to Tiny Rogues, I think, I guess now that I think about it, I like the Enter the Gungeon multiplayer, like that's actually a possibility. I definitely can make that like numpad 8, 4, 5, 6 controls your companion or whatever. But I just would personally be very unhappy with that, you know. So like my answer to multiplayer is always no.
I think that's a good one because Binding of Isaac's working on multiplayer, of course. That's taken a while and that's obviously a very huge game. Dome Keeper has talked about multiplayer, but they're also having a very hard time with it. I just had to ask because I don't view it as a co-op game really. It's just a simple game you pick up and play, but I wanted to hear your side of it, and that's kind of what I expected.
No, I am more interested in like multiplayer features, and I'm thinking like Dark Souls, like, I don't know, like leave messages on the floor.
That is fun stuff right there.
Summon a character of your friend, but it's not like controlled by your friend, but maybe like a ghost or like stuff like that. Like, not saying that will ever happen for Tiny Rogues, but I'm more interested in like asynchronous features or like, I mean, there are plans right now in Tiny Rogues to add like a card mini game, basically. And like, it would be fun if you could trade cards with your friends and stuff. So like, I definitely look into like social systems and asynchronous multiplayer stuff. That would be fun, but like the traditional local co-op will never happen. I still think it would be like super cool to like, you know, like reinforce some social aspects and like play it kind of together with your friends, but like more like how we played Pokemon Blue and Red, and like I trade my Pokemon for your Pokemon in that way. Like, that could be fun. Like, the community came up with like Soul Link challenges where you both play the game, and then like, I don't know, if you wear a chess piece, the other guy can't wear a chess piece.
Yeah, that stuff.
Stuff like that, you know. So that would also be cool, and like that's a possibility for the future. But there are no concrete plans right now for any of that.
Stuff in the future. That's the good stuff.
Yeah.
And really, I think that was all the questions that I really came up with. We discussed absolutely everything. That was incredible. Yeah. Where can people find you, Ruby?
Tiny Rogues on Steam. And then, I guess, Ruby Dev on X, formerly known as Twitter. Or Tiny Rogues on Twitter works too. Yep. The Tiny Rogues account on my Twitter is more like less shitposting.
It's professional.
Less opinions. It's more professional, right? Like on like my own Twitter, I will talk about my cats and give my game dev hot takes. But Tiny Rogues Twitter is more like, oh, here's an announcement for a patch. Here's a teaser or whatever. So yeah.
Follow both Twitters regardless.
Yeah.
Also, of course, for anyone that's watching this on YouTube, Tiny Rogues and all of that information for Ruby will be in the description. I don't know how Spotify works yet because this is my first podcast, but I will figure it out. So big thanks to Ruby for joining me. And yeah, that's all, I guess.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for being here. Goodbye, people listening to a podcast.